Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search. Ladies and gentle brothers, welcome to Journeys with JP. It is 20-something of January. Here we are. We're in the dark days. The storm has just arisen. Thoughts of darkness and death all around. To that end, we thought might cheer things up again a bit. I'm going to bring in my co-host and assistant and assistant producer and all-round good gal, Shungite expert, Nancy Hopkins. Hello, my love. How are you?
Very excellent. Thank you very much. And how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm overheated. You know, I've had problems with the heating recently. It's so hot here. It's unbelievable. A friend of mine, he came along today, he knocked on my door, he woke me up, and I was like, it was really early for me, you know, he woke me up and he said, I've got 2 tons of staves, and you know what these are? These are the barrels from whiskey, they're 100-year-old barrel staves, and he had a ton and a half, 2 tons, you know, a massive amount, for a good price, so I did that, that's wood on. That's for fuel for local currency, which is a real good thing to do. You know? Do you know I'm involved in a local currency?
Yes, and this is one of those deals. Why don't you tell the people about it? It's fascinating.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we will indeed. I will. And okay. So what it is? It's called LETS, Local Exchange Trading or Token System, LETS. It's a good word because it's kind of enabling. You know, let's go do this. Let's do this. One LET is £1. You know, so 5 LETs is equivalent to £5, etc. Or thereabouts, about a pound. Because if we say it is a pound, then it's money. But if we say it's about a pound, then it's not the same. It's very subtle. You could be like 0.01 of a penny out, and it wouldn't be a pound. So, long story. So we have a group. There's about we decided that there was a kind of optimal size of it, and it's about 150 people for an optimal size LET system. It's probably 144, you know, but it's about 150 we found was a kind of optimal. Any too big, you don't know people, and if it's too small, there's not enough trade. So it's an interesting little economic ecosystem, like a garden in a bottle kind of thing, to see how things recycle, and they work. It really works well. Probably 12 groups of 12 is probably how it works. But, yeah. Most people, I mean, this sort of thing starts out as babysitting circle in general. You know, you start out saying, oh, well, I'll look after your child on Tuesday if you can let me go out on Saturday. And they say, oh, well, okay, well, I've got my class on Wednesday. You do a class on Wednesday. Hang on a second. Tuesday and Wednesday. So then you say, well, I owe you one. Okay, good. And then you pick it up at another time. And then that becomes more and more formalized with a note saying, you know, I owe you 1 hour of babysitting or 3 hours of, three evenings of babysitting. And that becomes a currency. Because you trust, you know, because you know the people and you know that they will do that because, well, it's in their interest in the future anyway, because you will be looking after their kids. So it's a positive cycle. And what you're talking about there, if you translate that to economics, that's a credit-based trading system, which is the opposite of the Federal Reserve debt-based trading system, which takes us all to hell. The other one, the credit-based system takes you up, and it just keeps expanding. That's why they don't do it. So if we do have a monetary system, it will be based on credit rather than debit, and it'll work for everybody, and it'll work how people think money should work. Anyway.
Well, there's more of those over here in the United States. They keep growing. And there was just a case, I think it was in Vermont, where it was, you know, somebody tried to bring in the, no, you can't make your own money type of thing, and no, you can. And so it's got the blessing of the courts over here, because it'd be very difficult to try to stop it, and it's not that big, but if it grows bigger, they'll figure some way.
Well, if they made it illegal, they'd have to make Federal Reserve notes illegal. Because it has just about as much trust in it as the local trading system, and probably a lot less, because you don't know the people of the Federal Reserve, and they're very likely to want to trust them.
True.
So we got this thing, and you see the cartel, you know, the money cartel is connected with gold, oil, and diamonds, you know, G-O-D, God, and it's the... It's the pursuit of those that is their truth, and you know, we don't matter. We're just the means to the end. We get ground into the dirt. That's not their problem. As long as they get the gold, the oil, and the diamonds. Anyway, fuel is a thing that is highly prized, because if you have fuel. Perhaps you could make electricity. If you have electricity, you can cut wood. If you can cut wood, you can build a house. You know, that sort of line of thing. So if people have energy, then they can be sufficient. So if you restrict the energy, then that prevents people from being self-sufficient. And, you know, that you cost it, or you make some things illegal, like they're trying to make wood-burning stoves illegal now in the States. I mean... Come on, you know, how many tiny country cottages are gonna freeze to death if they obey those stupid rules? So, you know, they're making everybody illegal just because that's what they do.
they're totally illegal.
That's right. That's right.
There's no justification for any of this. They stole the country in 1871 over here, and I don't know when they stole the country over there. Probably before that, your country. They're illegal. It's a corporation that's hijacked the government of the United States. And so when people realize that it's all smoke and mirrors, that it's a corporation, I mean, to the point that there's a DUN number for the United States, and the chief executive officer is Obama. The next one is Biden. And the amount of employees that this company has exactly matches the employees in the federal U.S. government that we think is a government but isn't. It's really a corporation, and its job is the federal government of the United States. I mean, come on, it's in black and white. It's a DUNS number. And yet,
right.
People are just, you know, astounded to imagine that this is real.
You know, I was stomping around my kitchen the other night, having a rant, and saying, you know, you really just don't understand. It's all a business. It's all a business model. And there's no such thing as religion, and there's no such thing as government. It's all a business. You know, and I sound like a madman. I sound like bloody Manson or something. And yet, this is actually what we're talking about right here, that it's all been turned into, it's more than business. It's, what's they call it? Racketeering. It's really mafia business, isn't it?
Well, you know, the first time I heard this whole discussion of this corporation was a YouTube video of a woman in at the time it was a small Tea Party rally, and she was virtually crying to the point that I started to cry, because I don't even know what she's talking about, but she was so emotional. And then I'm listening to her and I'm going, oh, this sounds crazy. And so I investigated it and I went, oh my God, she was right. This is exactly what happened. It was the U.S. Congress, the 41st Congress in 1871, Act of 1871, they signed over the District of Columbia to the International Banking Consortium to bail themselves out of the Civil War. And by giving away the only land grant that was given in the United States' original constitution to this corporation, the corporation just set up basically, oh, well, they've got this Department of Justice, so we'll kind of like hijack that and we'll call it our Department of Justice. And then they changed the basis of the law from common law, God's law, to the mercenary material law of admiralty law or maritime law or the king's law that allows them to basically, when you go into one of their courts, you're not, there is no U.S. Constitution that is regulating it. The Constitution that's regulating it is really a corporate document. And you can tell this because everything that is paper that comes out of this these court systems have your names in capitals. And that's a telltale sign that it's a corporate document and that you're an asset of the corporation. And because it's based on maritime law was set up because of the ships going into a port and then there being a dispute between the merchant in the port and the ship's captain, like whatever cargo it was. So they set up these admiralty courts so that the merchant and the ship owner can, or the ship captain, can get together in an impartial law environment and have the dispute mitigated by these lawyers, these judges. But to participate in it, each of the parties has to agree to it. So the merchant has to agree, and so doesn't the captain. Well, when you go into a court of law, I've always thought it kind of odd the way that they phrase it, but they ask you, do you understand? You know, they read the charges and they, do you understand? Well, that's a legal technical term that says to you, the question is actually asked to you is, will you stand before this court? And if you say, no, I don't understand, you're saying, no, I will not stand in this admiralty court. I will not let you try me. And to counteract that kind of a sovereignty move, legal move, the judges in the United States have a document that's over 200 pages that tells the judge how to try to trick this person into agreeing to do it. And like Bill Brockbrader, he knew what was happening. He was countering it every time they attempted something. And then the judge called a recess, and the next day when they came in, they had discontinued the court case that he was, the number that he was under, and they started up on under a new number, and he got blindsided. And so when they can't even go by their own rules, they then make up something and do something else. But it, all you people have to do is just say, we're going back to the Republic. You know, corporation, you're fired. And in the Act of 1871, there's actually a paragraph, well, it's not a paragraph, it's more of a statement, that should, in the future, a Congress in the United States decide that they wanted to null and void the Act of 1871, all they had to do was take a vote on it. So if we could get some courageous legislatures there that are real people and not these automations to stand up and say, we revoke the Act of 1871, you can completely take over the corporation again. It's not difficult. It just takes people that are understanding what's really happening and who can wake up to the fact that it's a corporation. It's running things. Like you say, it's all the God thing. Gold, oil, and diamonds.
That's right. And, you know, energy in general. Gold. certainly, gold conducts electricity. Diamonds transmit light. They probably have, carbon fiber, isn't it? You have carbon nanotubes that transmit energy. What am I talking about? Just talking rubbish again. But you're talking about the idea that it's all a business. And it's all corporations. And, you know, like, I can imagine that the first corporations were the ship itself. You know, the name of the ship is the corporation. And then in order to deal with the different, that you have to have, divisions, like the captain was one division, or that he would be the CEO of the corporation. That allowed the courts to stand on a kind of equal ground.
Yes, and that's why we refer to it as the ship of state. You know, instead of it being an individual. See, in common law, the individual is primary. In admiralty law, the ship is primary.
Ah, going down with the ship, huh?
Ship of state.
Ship of fools.
That too.
Yeah, and, you know, there's also the relationship.
Well, and then there's the thing with the IRS. Now, this, I to be honest with you, I suspect it's true, but I haven't done the detailed work. Like, when I go after some of these stories, I don't want to just go back to where this person got their reference. I want to go back all the way to the original documents that, you know, are setting this stuff up. That's just the way I don't trust until I know, you know, exactly what happened. And that's the only way you can do it is the original. So I haven't gone through this. But it looks like the IRS takes our money and sends it over to you guys in that funny little area you have in London, the banking sector, where it's really run by the Vatican. And so the feds get a little piece of it. The Federal Reserve gets a little piece of it to make everybody happy and to run. And then your bank over there, Bank of London, gets a little more. And then the rest of it goes to the Pope, and nothing goes to the United States people. All of our taxes, it's never comes into, what is this? You know, something to investigate. But when the American people realize that their money is going to the Vatican, I suspect there will be a bit of a backlash.
Well, do you want to say that again then?
Well, basically it's that when you give your money to the IRS, it doesn't go to the government or the corporation of the United States. It ends up in the banking section of London, which is really controlled by the Vatican. And the Vatican ends up with the money that we think we're paying in taxes. Now, like I say, I have not done the research all the way back to the original documents to make sure this is absolutely what's happening, but it's like the corporation story. When I first heard it, I thought, oh, hogwash. But then I started hearing it from different sectors that, you know, I mean, okay, I respect this guy. He doesn't normally tell me BS. So, you know, and so I go, and the same thing is happening here, is that I'm seeing it in too many places to make me think, well, maybe it's hogwash. No, I think there's something behind it. And I'm not standing here and saying that that's the way it is, but that's the way it seems to be. And, you know, when I get the chance, I am going to run this down. Because it's bizarre.
Well, somewhere in there is the IMF. It was actually, you know, not half an hour ago, Sean was talking about that on his show, Sean Daubemont, just on the other side on Revolution A, that essentially there was a kind of link in the chain there, and the IMF is in there. Basically, taxes go to the IMF, and the IMF... presumably passes that all into the enormous Swiss bank account under some mountain somewhere, under the Matterhorn.
Yeah, I don't know the details of it. The IMF is the International Monetary Fund. And it does seem like that, you know, it's almost like an octopus, and it seems like this, that the IMF might be the body of the octopus. The more you try to study it, it's a difficult subject to study. And the people that go out there and learn and know, like Karen Hoots, it's like, be careful, because they'll go after you with everything they've got. They do not want people understanding what's really happening. So maybe we better stop talking about it.
We haven't been stopped yet. And this is, well, this is interesting what you were talking about. Okay, so there we are on Wall Spirit Radio, yesterday afternoon, just talking about stuff, you know, Shanghai things, and suddenly Nancy starts talking about the Spear of Destiny, and, oh, I'll do it again. No, didn't happen. Oh, well, never mind. Nancy starts talking about the Spear of Destiny, and your own experience, Nancy, of handling it. in different lifetimes. And, you know, we ask a question. Where does the spear of destiny come from? What's its story? If the spear could speak, as somebody who's really, you know, probably contacted that thing more than anybody else on the planet, if the spear could speak, what would it say?
You want me to speak for the spear of destiny?
You like? If you can. Is that awkward?
Well, I've never been asked the question before, and I can't give you an answer. All I can do is ask the question to Gaia and the spirit itself, you know, is like, you know, where did you come from? And what I'm getting is, I'm getting a vision of the black hole in the center of not just the galaxy, but everything.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, okay, it's in the form of an energy sphere. It's not in the form of the sphere. It's a sphere of energy. And it's almost like an energy field that is proto-energy. But it's proto-energy that is tinged with, real power, like God energy, if I was to say anything. It's like this very, very powerful God, you know, like defined as something that can create anything. And, alright, so it's part and parcel to Gaia in some way, in that when any time you start a consciousness creation, universe, solar system, whatever, planet, that this little pulse of energy is sent there because of its ability to protect the project, so to speak. So even though it was used by Hitler, Hitler had control over it, and it's, you know, the Nazis did a lot of really, 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 really bad things. But as anybody who's been, you know, thinking in metaphysics terms for a long time, you realize that a lot of evil events are necessary in order to have a growth of understanding and enlightenment. So you'll hear people say there is nothing that's bad or evil because it just pushes you into a new enlightenment point. And this energy seems to be something like that, that, well, you can try to use it for evil, but in the end, what you're going to learn from it is going to be required for the next jump in enlightenment. And certainly, before Hitler, would anybody have imagined that kind of evil? Yes, if you researched history, it had been done time and time again. But at the time of the 30s and the 40s, when there were so many really interesting energies that were happening, different timelines that were starting to take off, because of the growth of knowledge, especially in the sciences. So what the sphere is like a control mechanism. And I suspect that the reason that I ended up telling you the story last night about how the sphere is now being used by Gaia, that Gaia does have direct control over it, and what it's being used for now, which is to build a new reality, but to build one that's based on group consensus. Prior to that, you had the sphere that was actually the power could be manipulated by one person. It was like, here's the power, it's in the hands of one person. One person could manipulate it for good or evil, control over the earth, like Adolf Hitler demonstrated. Like before him was Charlemagne. And Charlemagne was an amazingly important historical figure for a lot of reasons. So now the stipulation is that, no, we're not going to give that kind of power, not just to one person, but even to a group like the Illuminati or, you know, the reptilians or whoever is out there. we're claiming dominion over our own being and our own reality. So at that point, you have a new enlightenment within human beings who, as a group, are coming together. I mean, we've got a group Wolf Spirit. We've got a group Revolution Radio and Wolf Spirit. We've got a group of the Shanghai store and the people there. I mean, you get these layers and layers that are really on the same focus of creating a new reality. And all of those groups are individuals coming together. There's no leadership. Nobody's standing up there saying, we're going to do this or we're going to do that. We're going like, wow, let's try this. Maybe this will work. It's very much of an experimental, we really don't know, because at least we've come to an enlightenment that we realize we don't know. So at that moment, even though Gaia has the ultimate control over it, she's released it back to the group saying, you know, you have the right to use the prototype energy to create whatever reality you want. In our case, we're hoping to interject all the required energies that will keep us from making mistakes that we've made time and time and time again.
You know, this is a very interesting thing, what you say. Because as you say it, you know, I'm listening in and listening to other things. And the picture I'm getting is that it's like she's learned off the military, right? You know, that, like... there's certain fail-safe mechanisms that you need two people to do, to turn the keys, to press the buttons, to write, put the codes in at the same time. Yeah, they have to be separate. They, you know, they put these two control panels 8 feet away, so you can't get one person doing it. So you have to have two people. This is like, she said, that's a good idea. So now it can only be a group who can operate this thing. And it's not a thing anymore. It's an energy signature.
It's an energy signature. That's exactly what it is. It's always been an energy signature. Just for, you know, Millennium was contained within that spearhead. And now we know that it's a frequency that is contained in a piece of elite shungite and a piece of raw shungite and works through a radionics machine. You know, it's like, it's very scientific. That's what's so very interesting about it. It's yes, it's group, and it has to be operated by human beings, but in the details of it, it's a very scientific process that we're going through. There's not a lot of... The only basic emotion that is prevalent through this whole thing is love and respect. You find that the people, I mean, Jay, the people that we know that we're working with, we have such a high respect for each other. You know, when I and you had a conversation last week and you said that you thought the shungite was sucking things in, and I'm thinking, no, it's putting out this field. I'm going like, I know I'm right. I questioned myself, and then I know, no, I'm right. But then I knew that you were right. So then I went to Walt and said, Walt, here's the situation. This is what he said. This is what I said. What's really happening? And we went into the geometry of the molecule itself to understand that it's got like a door. You open the door one way, then it goes, and you open the door the other way. And so when the door is open towards the quantum field, things are getting sucked into the null point of the fullerene and then being transmuted into proto-energy again. When the door is opened into the 3D, then the energy that's flowing through is coming directly from the quantum area and is creating these fields that I'm seeing that are so powerful that any other field, whether it be water or food or toxins or electromagnetic fields, react to it. Nothing on the 3D is as powerful as a shungite field. But in reality, it's because of this door. And it has to be a door because of the geometric structure and the concept that Bucky Fuller had of the... what did he call it? It's the tetrahedrons coming, bouncing in and out. So that they keep, it's like they're turning inside out. And when you have the two tetrahedrons with the points together, the tops of them together, the geometric energy flow is causing the tetrahedrons to collapse towards a null point, a zero point, a point, and then to come out the other side, so that now they're on the other side of the null point. And it's just the framework of how Bucky saw the energy flowing. And so it's just part and parcel of the way that the fullerene is molecularly structured. So
here's the thing. I've been doing some research as well, obviously, and some practical stuff. And I've been working with this thing we call the Genesa crystal.
Yes.
Which is basically four circles, four rings that are placed at... essentially, it makes a tetrahedron. If you have four planes that intersect, they will create a tetrahedron, and that's what these rings do. But the way you put them together, it forms what they call the Genesa crystal, which has triangles and squares on the face of them. It's not a platonic solid, which is purely regular single triangles or pentagons, but it's a crystal that is a blend of this three-sided, four-sided thing, and it's made of four circles. So, you know, there's all this amazing geometry that's involved. And
let me interrupt you for a second, because we talked about this on the Cosmic Reality show. So if they go over to cosmicreality.net and go to Wolf Spirit tab, which is the far right side, and right under that there's a listing called Current. And if you hit on Current, there are pictures of the Genesis crystal.
Even on your site, Nancy.
On my site, yes.
Cosmicreality.net, www.cosmicreality.net, right? If you look at the top, you'll see. And Nassim Haramin has been going on about this in great length. And essentially, from the physics point of view, from the psychic point of view, there's all these things about this thing, and it could be what we're exactly talking about. It could suck in and create a field, because it might be sucking stuff in and blowing out a field all at the same time, because what they said, things go in through the triangles and out through the squares, or is it out in through the squares and out through the triangles? I think it's out in through the triangles and out through the squares. As unstable energy gets turned to stable energy, perhaps, you know, three goes to four. And so there's your torus that is involved in this form. It's called a vector equilibrium, which is a really horrible name. It's also called a cube octahedron, which is still a mouthful. We need something like more, a single syllable to define this form, which is kind of universal, and yet it's been hidden for a long time, hasn't it, Nancy?
Genesis crystal is what it is to me. That's the reason that I use that, even though it's not the buckyball, is because it so clearly demonstrates Harriman's concept of the way the geometry and the energy responds, but that's based on Fuller's understanding of vector equilibrium, which is that all the lines, even the ones that are in the middle of it, all the angles are exactly the same. And that when you put this all together, you've got a null point, a zero point, that causes the torsion field to begin to expand in both directions. And what I think that is missing is the concept of the pulsing. You know, that it pulses. I see it pulsing. So I don't think it's just, you know, coming in one way and going out another. I think that it's actually almost turning itself inside out continually, that we're energetically feeling like a pulse.
Yeah, the triangles turn inside out to become squares, and the squares turn inside out to become triangles, and it's like one of those it's like made of rubber, it's like a soft rubber thing with a gel inside it, and it kind of, it's one of these children's toys. It kind of just folds in on itself like a worm, almost. If you know what I'm talking about, it's just like a, it's got a bag, but it's got a It's a donut shape. It's a toroidal shape of plastic, rubbery plastic that is continuous, and it will. You can roll it now. I can't even describe it. I'm sorry. I don't know. But it's like that. It turns itself inside out.
Well, that's one of the problems that we do have is that what we're understanding about the science, which is not new science, it's just secret science. They don't want us to understand how to manipulate energy because manipulation of energy is defined as magic. That's what it is. It's real magic is the manipulation of energy. They don't want us to understand all this. So they may have words for it, but, you know, it's like you say, maybe we should start our own vocabulary as to what we're seeing here. Because it's like each one of us is so important because each one of us is looking at it from a different perspective and so seeing it slightly different. And the only way that we're getting to a cohesive understanding of what's really happening is because we keep talking to each other about it. Well, I see it this way. Not that my way is any better than your way. It's just the way that I'm seeing it. You know, we don't have anything in the ante. There is no game being played here. There's no poker game being played here. We're just really trying to understand the basic fundamental building blocks of everything that is. And that comes down to energy and the geometry of the energy. And that's what I think we're learning is how to see the universe in those terms.
And so things turn inside out. As I'm just getting a thing from Walt here. So maybe we should bring him in.
Bring him in. He's always fun.
If you rotate the eight triangles in an octahedron, it took me a while to get what you're saying here. But if you take an octahedron and kind of imagine exploding it slowly so that all the faces just kind of blast away from each other like it was something in space, and then you turn them through 60 degrees, something like that, 30 degrees maybe, then the points will join together around squares, and that's a cube octahedron.
I think there's a picture up on that last week's show too that shows that. I put a series of pictures because we had touched on so many different geometric shapes, and then I put the audio tape up so that as they're listening to the tape, they can actually see the pictures and the geometric forms that we're talking
about. Can you give us the URL again, Nancy?
Yeah, you just go to cosmicreality.net. You go to the Wolf Spirit tab that's over on the right, and the first listing under there says current, and that was last week's show. I haven't changed it yet. And the pictures will be there.
Thanks a lot, Nancy. So, how does it all relate? You know, we got these the Genesa crystal. Perhaps the buckyball is more complex than we think, and perhaps the buckyball is the same. That is,
I think it's like Genesis crystal on steroids.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I've been thinking about making a Genesa crystal with 10 rings, which apparently is called an Earth crystal. Oh. You can make it with hexagons, and Nikki made one with tiny hexagons of wire. She's very good with the like that. And she made a sphere of, like, dozens of hexagons. And they make stars, so it goes five and sixes on the Earth crystal. So when you have 10 rings, you have fives and sixes. When you have 4 rings, you have threes and fours. Isn't that interesting? So, let's bring Walt into the combo. Nancy, are you still there? Yeah? Yeah?
Huh? I'm here, but I'm talking to myself. I had the mic off.
That's why. I thought you'd gone into another dimension.
No. I just spaced out with the mic off. I got this cat on my lap again. He thinks that I'm talking to myself or something when I'm on the radio. He just thinks it's very important that he be here with me.
All right. Well, obviously he's watching over us, and watching over us too from the higher dimension of yeah. Walt Silver, good afternoon.
Oh, I guess it's afternoon over there. I didn't know that.
It's afternoon in the Pacific.
Good evening, everyone.
Early evening. Good evening, Walt. How are you, my friend?
Oh, fine. I'm having fun listening to you guys.
So, we were all here last night when Nancy started talking about all this, all these past lives, and in a way, you know, she was saying, you know, let's how do the two of us, i.e. yourself and myself, Walt, how do we relate to these energies that she was talking about? And I'm just wondering, what was your experience of listening to Nancy talking about experiencing the energy of the Spear of Destiny, and knowing about the history and seeing her part in that history? How was your feeling with that?
Well, interesting question, because this afternoon I had a chance to do last night when I laid down on the rejuvenation machine, I decided to put on the drumming and do a shamanic journey, and for some reason during the journey the subject of that spear came up. And like in other journeys that I've done for Nancy, not to speak to her guides, but to speak to my guides to answer questions that she has had, they come back with a fire hose of information where they just giving you this gigantic stream of data, and it's so much that you have to say, okay, slow down or stop, because there's no way anybody can digest this. But that thing is way older than anybody suspects. I'm sorry, it goes even back further than Babylon. And that three-piece thing is actually a big clue as to what it was used for. I don't feel comfortable talking any more than that, sorry. There was just too much information. But you guys are on the right track. It is, you know how several things happened during the fall of Atlantis, during the last times before that civilization completely disappeared. As you know, the firmament was destroyed. The veil was developed, which is an artificial construct. I mean, there should not be a veil. We should not be subjected to forgetting when we're born. You know, we should not be disconnected from the other side. The mind was made accessible. We were taken away from being heart-centered to being more head-centered. All of these things, all of these contrivances happened at that time, at the time of the fall, because that was the goal of certain groups. You know, okay, how do we go about, here you have a planet literally populated with all these mini-gods. Okay, we have to dumb them down. What do? And then you put all these things in place. And a lot of technology was left behind, technology that nobody could grasp, because in order to grasp it, you have to be at that high level of consciousness. You have to be heart-centered. You have to be in tune with your true self. You have to be open to the quantum field. For example, can you ask, if you have a 5-year-old child, can you ask the child to sit behind the wheel and drive the car, this very complex instrument? No, the child is missing things. You know, he needs age, experience, knowledge of the vehicle, the size necessary to reach the pedals. You have this living entity, there's nothing wrong with him, but he's not qualified to drive a vehicle. Well, a lot of this stuff happened, you know, after the fall of Atlantis. All of this technology was left behind, and nobody knew what the heck to do with it. And those who did know just knew like the tip of the iceberg. Like, imagine that you you don't know what a gun is, and you find it somewhere. You don't know what it's for, so you take it home and you use it to nail hammers on the wall, because that's the best use you can do out of it, right? You have no idea that it has a cartridge and a magazine, and it has these high velocity projectiles, and you can destroy things with it and kill things with it, because your level of understanding, that's as much as it can grasp. It's an instrument, it fits well in my hand, and I can hammer nails with it. Now,
yeah, I get you totally. It's like, what do you do with technology that you're not prepared for? You know,
yeah.
Imagine somebody from 100 years ago having to deal with a smartphone. You know, oh, well, you just touch that little button at the top there, and then the screen will light up with pictures. It's like... it's a devil, you know. You know, attitudes like that might pervade if you had came across ancient technology. And you know, we've seen many films that do that. But even, like I'm saying, you know, common items in our world today, even when we were kids, were magic. You know, imagine a cell phone. That was, you know, that was literally Star Trek.
And there's being completely ignorant of something is one thing, but having a little bit of knowledge of something, that's way more dangerous. Because having a little bit of knowledge of how something works or how it's supposed to be used gives you partial access to what it can do. That's even way more dangerous than if you knew nothing at all about it. And that's how things get used for the wrong purposes. And you end up destroying...
Let me just say, and that's why when we were given the Spear of Destiny again, it was linked to Shungite, which can do no evil.
There you have it.
We're going to give you this device that is probably the most powerful device you'll ever see, ever, and we're going to make sure that you can't make a mistake with it. You know, how beautiful is that?
Correct.
It's a superconducting, hyper-dimensional diode that allows only one way through.
Yeah. I mean, look at nuclear power in the world today. They still don't have a good solid grasp on it. And they have to... Have you seen any documentation or any information regarding nuclear power plants? 90% of the documentation, it's all about protection and safety. That's how much they have a handle on this nuclear energy. If it's so safe and so easy to control, why do you need 90% of your documentation describing how to protect from it, how to control it, how to do this? If this happens, do this. If this happens, do this. Look at the reactors. The majority of the mechanisms that they have is safety measures. The whole thing is built on safety measures, because that's how much they don't understand it and they don't know how to control it. And all the money goes into contingency plans, what to do when this thing goes out of control. So if you had a solid grasp on it, it wouldn't be this way. And then on the other side of this, you see geniuses like, you know, ET geniuses like Tesla. You see this guy reading the newspaper in a room surrounded by a shower of sparks. And he's like, he had a solid grasp of it. He wasn't afraid of it. He knew what he was doing. His experiments, if anything, were more to prove to himself that it was doable, not because he wanted to see what would happen. Remember the story of, for example, Mozart, and you know, another born genius. His father noted early on in his life, because you know his father is the one who taught him music, when the child, and at 7 years old, he was already composing. When he was composing, he had no errors of harmony. The notations were all perfect, because the music was already finished inside him, in his head or in his heart, wherever it was already finished. All he was doing is transposing it on paper. That's having a grasp of something, because you have realized that thing. You and the thing are one. So you have a solid grasp on it. You can handle that power with proper responsibility. But, you know, these huge, tremendous energies, they have little grasp of it and even less control of it. It's amazing we're not at our worst point in history.
So what are you talking about?
CERN is another one.
Well, yeah.
They don't know what the hell they're doing over there.
Well, I think somebody does, and that's the worst part of it. But just to take it back, so what we're talking about essentially is like the joystick for the planet, you know, what the level of consciousness can be, like the whole, a control panel, setting parameters. Is that what you're talking about, Nancy? For the reality, setting parameters for reality, and so instead of a domination matrix, it can dictate a dominion matrix.
Nancy, give that man a cigar.
Nancy, unmute your mic.
No, I was trying to feed the cat. I was really irritated.
All right. Sorry.
I was listening to you. I just couldn't get back to the unmute. I totally agree. I mean, that's what I think it's all about. Whatever you said. Maybe I wasn't paying that much attention.
No, what I'm saying. Okay, so I'll just say it again because it's like it's worth repeating. That basically, the Spear of Destiny is a like a joystick that can drive the planet, can drive the psychic orientation. Let's put it that way. You know, like a north-south, you know, magnetic north, magnetic east. That there's a, you can drive the consciousness a particular direction using the Spear of Destiny to create the realities, and that's what you've been using with this device called the Reality Changer. Is that what you're talking about?
Reality Dialer. Yes.
Reality Dialer. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's more like being the majority. In other words, reality is what we think it is. Majority rules. And I've said from the beginning that it doesn't matter if you have, you know, it's not a matter of numbers. It's a matter of focus. And the focus is on bringing in the energies to basically create whatever manifested reality you have in your mind. And what I think the spear gives you is the power to be the majority. And that's why it only took one person to control it, to manipulate everything. But it's more like rule two, majority rules. Does that make sense?
Indeed. So, how many... Say there's a reality that maybe only one person controls because they've got the key to it. But if everybody has the key to it, how many would it take to tip that over to a different reality? Well, what's the sort of tipping point proportion?
Well, I think we've already passed that. And I don't exactly know what it was, but I'm pretty sure it was when Walt joined us, the three. When I got introduced to Shungite, which we know was a fairly magical, you know, a whole bunch of synchronistic events had to happen for me to actually have Shungite in my hands because somebody brought it to me. And then I said to you, you know, Jay, I've got this weird stuff. It's called Shungite. And you immediately gave me a voice. You began to you know, you didn't just write me off as being somebody that was insane. You started to, well, gee, you know, and it was our conversations that Walt heard that made him join us. And it was about that time that I felt like maybe the 100th monkey thing had happened, that there was enough of a force occurring. And by then I was very much involved with Jack and the Watchers and Gene Rockefeller and, you know, dozens, and you were too, even more so. And Walt had done such an amazing amount of learning in the shamanistic field that he brought to the table the ability to understand what you and I were saying and to create devices through guidance of his own guides. And you, the same thing. I mean, yeah, I've got to post that thing on your crown root chakra. Crown root, what is it again? Crown root?
Oh, the crown-based transmissions.
Those things are amazing. I've gone back and looked at them a couple of times. And for you to have picked up that information so far back and now can look at it and say, oh, I understand what they're saying, and you can see the reality of their words because it's right there in front of us. So we are part of a very complex kind of machinery, if you want. Well, I don't like the word machinery, but energy system that brings in this person and this person and this person, and because we're together now, we're feeding each other the energy that takes us to the next level of enlightenment. So I think that we've already see. Last night when the Spear of Destiny thing came up, you said to me, "Or is this a secret?" And it had been. I was told not to relate the information regarding how Patton got the energy out of the spear and the whole story of how it ended up with Gaia. I'd never told that story on the air, nor had I told very many people about it. And so I got kind of flustered when I'm going like, you want me to tell the story? Because I'm hearing tell the story of the spear in my ear. And I'm going like, you want me to tell the story? And you started asking, was it a secret? And I'm going, yes, it is a secret. But then I'm going like, you want me to tell? All right, I'll tell the story, because I think that it was time for people to understand the full implications of what it is we're really doing here. You know, every time we get together, it's almost like the if you think of one of these game boards, you know, or a video game, every time you think you've got the game under control, all of a sudden it jumps, it goes to another level. And it's sort of the same thing.
Stay with us on this level, or maybe come with us to the next level. In about 5 minutes' time, on the other side of these messages.
Mic on? Hello? Walt, can you hear me? Walt? Jay?
Hello.
Where's Jay? Can you hear me? Does he know we're back on? Hello?
You're still out.
Okay, so where were we? I'm assuming we might be live. I'm not sure what Jay's doing.
Let me open the browser. I'll mute my mic.
Anyway, if you guys are out there, thank you for staying with us. We're not sure. We were just chatting with JP, but he doesn't seem to be responding, so I'm not exactly sure why. We've been talking about...
So, good afternoon.
Oh, there he is.
Yes, back from the break. This is Journeys with JP.
Jay, you got your mic on?
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Is that better?
Walt, can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Hello, everybody.
Walt?
Oh, Nancy, can you... Nancy,
I can hear
you,
Jay.
He's got his chronograph on, so he's
back on?
Yeah, I know we're back on.
Okay, no, what happened is there was a very long delay.
Your speakers.
Okay, so where were we? I'm assuming we might be live. I'm not sure what Jay's doing.
Hello, hello.
Can you open the browser?
Hello, yeah, I'm back on.
Can you hear me, Jay?
Guys are out there. Thank you for staying with us. We're not sure. We were just chatting with JP, but... he doesn't seem to be responding, so I'm not exactly sure.
Oh, I get it.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. It's all right.
Oh, that was weird.
It's all right. I was listening to your two-minute delay.
Yes, you were here, so I said, well, where is he? And then then you showed up, and then it kept repeating itself, so I don't know.
It's all right.
Some kind of weird loop.
Yeah. It was mine. So anyway, good afternoon. See, I was monitoring the actual stream, and then I didn't go back to the original stream. I was just listening to all the ads on there. So I was 2 minutes. I was in a different time dimension. I was,
wow.
So there you
could
go.
Can you flip it forward so you can listen to what happens 2 minutes in the future?
I'm gonna have to, because otherwise I won't know what to say, will I? You know, if I don't know what's going to happen, how can I say, you know, how? Anyway, so meanwhile, there is activity in the chat room in Studio B. Could we please hear the story or secret of her discovery? This is from Babs. Thanks, Babs. Like Babs.
Oh boy, it was what, 45 minutes of me just talking?
Yeah. Well, anyway, you got an hour. You got 55 minutes. Take your time.
We could
bounce it a bit, but yeah. You maybe got a kind of better, but tell us the story.
I'll tell it in a nutshell. And seriously, if you want to know all the details, then it's up on Wolf Spirit under the current file of archives under JP's Ever Beyond radio show. But in a nutshell, we have a spear that was the ceremonial spear of the Jewish people that was used by Longinus, who was the captain of the Roman guard overseeing the crucifixion of Jesus. And Longinus had a mystical event happen where his cataracts disappeared. He was able to see the face of Christ and to become completely immersed in the suffering the man was going through, to the point that he killed him with this spear, the ceremonial spear of the Jewish people, therefore setting in motion what's called the Spear of Destiny. And I went through the history of the Spear of Destiny that included it getting into France in the hands of Mary Magdalene and Jesus' offspring, because, yes, boys and girls, Jesus and Mary Magdalene were husband and wife, and they had at least one child, Ruth, and probably others. And they went to France, and then the offspring of that family married into the nomadic tribes coming out of Germany, and Merovi, the head of the group of Germans, married into the family, becoming the Merovingians, that then became the Charlemagnes, and then became the Habsburgs. And in the Habsburgs Museum, Adolf Hitler stumbled upon the Spear of Destiny, started researching it, and found out that the Spear of Destiny has control over good and evil. Whoever's got the power over this, is controlling the spear, has power over the planet for good or evil. And to have the right to have ownership or control over the spear, you have to have a legal right to it. There has to be some line of chain from the owner of it to you. And then you have to maintain control over it. In the case of Charlemagne, he actually dropped it during a battle environment and was dead within days. In the case of Adolf Hitler, who claimed it when Austria voted to rejoin Germany, and then therefore giving the Chancellor of Germany, Adolf Hitler, the legal right to the spear, he went to Austria and picked it up. When the spear, which had been moved from the center of Nazism in Nuremberg to a place, they built a tunnel and they put a vault in there like a bank vault, and they had the spear in there and the crown jewels of the Austrian and German empires, all the really expensive stuff was in this vault. And when the Americans, some soldiers, came upon the tunnel and the vault, and so therefore claiming the Spear of Destiny in the name of the United States through war, Adolf Hitler committed suicide, therefore, because he dropped, he lost control of the spear at the same time that they found it. So the Spear of Destiny then was sitting in this vault when George Patton comes along and takes a look at it and doesn't realize that when he looked at it, it was the real spear, but the energy left the spear and went into his body. And so the next thing he knows, he's looking at the spear, but he's seeing nothing. He thinks it's a phony. And for that reason and other reasons, he was assassinated. And he was assassinated in what looked like an automobile accident where he broke his neck, but then the actual assassin came out and said no, he actually walked up to the car that had been hit by the truck. Everybody inside was stunned. He reached in and used a plunging weapon, which broke Patton's neck. And then Patton managed to live long enough to get his wife to realize that it was an assassination attempt and that they were going to get him. He's paraplegic by then. So George Patton and I have a connection because I believe that I know that he was an incarnated individual for my own soul. So he and I are linked at the soul level. The subconscious mind is the conscious mind of your soul. And because of the training that I've gotten over my lifetime, I've been able to access that bank of knowledge in a way like, it's sort of like all these individuals are like personal computers. And to get on the internet, you have to have a server computer, which links all these little personal computers so they can talk to one another over the internet. Well, if one of those personal computers that's a human being, like me, realizes that there is a link to this server computer that's got access to all these other personalities, then I can access the life experience of anybody that my soul is actually projected. It's like that's the Akashic record of my soul, if you want to think of it that way. So I had a deep understanding of Patton and knew quite a bit about him and would oftentimes, to be honest with you, kind of channel him when I was in the military, which was a lot of fun for the people that worked around me because they knew that I could do this. And so we'd have these generals come visit us and, you know, they'd take an attitude and, you know, it was like, okay, I'll just let George come out. And George would come out and these 4-star, 5-star generals would start quaking in their boots because they're confronting this energy of a man who was quite taken with himself. And out of the body of this, you know, little lieutenant, female, you know, it's like, what the hell is happening? But my people were trained in it because my people were trained in telepathy. So that's another story. But anyway, so we were telling the story about the Spear of Destiny. And it, like I say, I went into the details of it, and it was very long, but it was very interesting. I listened to it today. It was actually pretty good. And what happened was that in 2012, early 2012, I became involved with Jack the Watcher. Now, Jack is a sentient being who's inside of a horse. And that horse began to telepathically communicate with Gene Rockefeller, his owner. She, in an amazing, courageous way, went out and started to give the messages that Jack was telepathically communicating to her on a blog that I happened upon, and then I emailed her, and we became email friends for quite a while. But then now we're good friends. We talk on the phone, and during this process of just getting to know Gene, Jack gets in the mix and started telling Gene, and I didn't get into all of the details of this yesterday, but he started to tell Gene things about me that nobody knows. And Gene is like, obviously, she's like relating what he's saying, but she has no clue of it. And one day she said to me, we were about to do a ceremony, and she said to me, Jack said, you have the Spear of Destiny. And I said, Gene, do you know what the Spear of Destiny is? And she said, I don't have any idea. She said, but that's what he told me to tell you. And that led to me being involved in taking, because the Spear of Destiny, when it left the spear head and entered Patton, at Patton's death, it was, again, in three lines, in three energy frequencies, sent to specific rocks, specific quartz crystals, that were then, I was led to end up being the owner of. So, in fact, Jack was right, that the Spear of Destiny, in the form of three different crystals, was in my house. So I get them together, we do the ceremony, and I was telling these guys that it was the first time and the only time in all of the energy work I've done for decades where I was actually felt fear because there was nobody there. The normal players weren't there. I didn't feel anybody, just me, the Spear of Destiny, and I was drumming. And when the drumming ended, which indicates that whatever's happening is over with, I'm sitting there going like, is this, because it was the darkest night I've ever seen in my life. It was darker than any night I've ever experienced. And I'm sitting there, and the spear is sitting there on a pole in front of me that had been there for, it was probably 45 minutes. And I'm going like, are we done? And all of a sudden, the spear just kind of like fell apart. And when I was a little panicky, I went, oh my God, the spear of destiny just broke. I better put it back together. And I hear this voice, I never again. And it was the voice of Gaia, and I realized that Gaia had the spear of the spear's energy now, and that she was now in control of the spear of destiny. Then along comes Shungite in 2014, and Walt and Jay, and we all get together, and we're doing this, talking to one another, and we're talking Shungite and everything that Shungite is, and Walt is a shamanistic trained human that can go in on the other side and talk to guides and find out mystical and magical information that he brings back and then creates devices, and then he hands them to me and says, what's this make? What is this for? And so then I have to kind of like, well, what is this for? And so I get downloads, messages as to what these things are. And one of the things that we were given was the reality dialer. And the reality dialer, it's a complex system. It's only one part. But it's based on radionics, a radionics box, if anybody knows what that's about. But when he made it and he got it to me, and I tried to turn it on, it wouldn't turn on. And then I got a picture in my head that showed me a particular two different stones that came together, and they said, that's the key. So I had to wrap these things so that they were together. And then once I put that on the radionics box, then the whole thing just started up. And so what the radionics box is being used for is to, we believe that reality is what we think it is. So we looked at the reality that was there, and yes, we can fix the Federal Reserve. Yes, we can tell people about the IRS. We can go back to the Republic, but it's a lot of work. And none of us were up for this work, so we sort of just decided that we would create our new reality, because that reality can sit there and do whatever it wants. The stronger our reality becomes, the more people are going to jump that reality over here, because they're going to be more in resonance with our reality. And in order to make a, I can't ever say perfect, because I don't know that, it's like that thing that perfect keeps getting farther away from you the more you learn about it. So I'm going to say a much better, preferable reality is what we're creating, and we're doing that by interjecting energies into it. We're stipulating what energies we want in our reality. So the first one that went in was the pink rose, because that is a very high level energy near the ascended beings level, and it is a protective energy. And then we put in like anti-fluoride. Well, anti-fluoride is really opening up your pineal gland. So many more people were suddenly waking up and feeling connected to their higher selves. So then we put in no negative thinking. That you, if you have a negative thought, all of a sudden it's like, that's a negative thought, I don't want to do that, because we've learned that in this energy universe, the most important thing that we have is our own thinking. And that if we can claim dominion over our own being, that requires, that demands that you now have to watch what you're thinking. Because before, when you were a muddled brain, and you thought, well, gee, I'm going to lose my job if it keeps going like this. Well, you may lose your job. In this new energy environment, if you think that, you will lose your job, and you'll lose it very fast. So to prevent people from going into that kind of instantaneous manifestation at a negative level, we plugged in this energy that says every time you go negative, you're going to go, oh, I can't think that way. And it's once you accept that energy in your being, because it's there for you, it's in this reality, then you will all of a sudden find it much easier to stay focused on only good thinking. So we had that kind of thing in there. We put joy and love and compassion and purity. Purity is an extraordinarily healing energy. And we have been guided, both Walt and I have been guided, like, one day I said to him, oh, I got two more energies that we've got to put in. And he said, well, I've got one here. And it wasn't the same energies, they were different. But what we're talking about is, we're talking about a science. A science that says, in an energy universe, like if you've got an antenna and you want to pick up FM signals, but your antenna only is cut or manufactured to pick up AM signals, you're not going to see an FM signal. You have got to have the antenna cut in a certain length so that it will pick up the frequencies. It's based on length. It's geometric relationship. So what Walt does is if we're looking for the energy of joy, he goes and he says, okay, guides, and he works with a pendulum, because that way not only does his energy go into giving him the answer, the guides can easily manipulate the pendulum to give him absolutely accurate information. So he would say, okay, what is the length of joy as a frequency, as an energy frequency? And he would get the length. And so once he's got that length of copper, then he puts it into a spiral that is the key. It's a geometric key of building and moving energy. It's basically a way of moving energy. And in the central part of this, every one of these spirals is a piece of shungite, because shungite cannot be used for any negativity, and because shungite pulls from the quantum energy, therefore creating a much more powerful current of the energy flowing through the spiral. So each of these spirals are cut at different lengths, but they represent, they not just don't represent, they are the frequency contained in a geometric form of whatever it is that we're dealing with. So then those things are put in the radionics system, and then they are put through a computer system that's made of minerals and gems and everything else, because, and that right now, the computers that they're using right now are based on crystals. What we're using is so obsolete, you know, it's terrible. They have crystal computers out there. So I was guided to build this big pile of stuff that turned out to be a computer. So the reality dialer dials into the computer. The computer then puts it into another device that we were given, and it builds into the reality that we're building. And so to make this thing go, it takes the Spear of Destiny, the little key that they had me make. And so now what we're talking about is that we are creating a reality, knowingly putting in energies that are the energies that we believe will be the healing and protective energies that will not allow us to do what we have done continually over and over again. Because I know that I personally have taken responsibility for any of this bad stuff that humanity has done. I'm not going to say it's an ET thing. I'm not going to say it's the ancient aliens. I'm not going to say any of that. We have got to take responsibility before we can say, we've done this. What mistakes did we make? How can we fix it? And we can fix it in an energy universe by creating a reality that has the energies in it that we want to have in it. And so that's what we're doing. That's what we've been doing. And we started this back last year, I don't even remember when, and all I can say is that the farther down the path we go, the more we are getting indication after indication that exactly what we were hoping to do has been done. Did I answer the question?
The reality dialer creating new realities. So... is it a kind of incremental thing, or do you just crank it all the way up? When you dial in the reality, is it just like making a slight course direction in the way that people's consciousnesses may perhaps lean in a tendency that would be more positive than negative? For instance, less greedy, more altruistic, or something like that?
When they have me put, they're very specific as to the... To what goes in when. And some of these spirals have been in there, like the one piece right now that's running right now has been in there. This is going on over 2 weeks that they're just running this piece. And it's running at not quite full blast, but it is running in a very powerful stream even now. When I put the purity one in, It did a burst. It was like boom, you know, but then it cut back on its energy, and over a period of, again, probably 10 days, it just started getting, you know, less and less. It was almost like you start to stop filling up a glass as fast as you were because you get near the top. So I have different feelings about what's happening with the different energies. But I suspect what happens is just like you're alluding to, is that They start the energy up, and then the people that are in this reality are lock solid in this reality. are very subtly readjusted to be able to handle the energies. And I suspect that it is the amount of adjusting required by the people in the reality, because I've noticed that since when we first started doing it, it's taking longer and longer to put in a given frequency, and that I'm seeing it in one of these things where it does its burst, and then it sort of like is very, then it starts to trickle in, almost like it's waiting for people to get to the next, to be able to adjust to its energy. That's what I think's happening.
That sounds like a quantum state thing anyway. All right, so I'm not going to BS about quantum. Quantum is the energy that it takes from to get from one atomic shell to another, and it's a certain amount of energy that the suddenly you pump the atom with energy, and then suddenly it snaps to the next level and it becomes a new electron. So, you know, redefining what we believe electrons are anyway. But it's that's what quantum means. So when you're talking about this, this sounds exactly the same, that it sends out a burst of energy. Anything coming back, waiting, yep, here comes again, and then another one sends out. And that sounds also very much like the action of the galaxy and the solar system in terms of the planets. That's what happens with the sun. A large burst sends a plasma arc all the way to the Earth that creates a conductive connection every 8 minutes, because it takes 8 minutes to get here.
Yes, and again, it's a macrocosm towards the microcosm. Someday we're going to have a very short list of cosmic rules. This works because of this, and this works because of that, because again, I mean, you look at the big universe and it's doing the same thing at the quantum level. But the only way you can understand the whole thing is to understand it. It's energy. And energy has certain rules and regulations, and it can be controlled by geometry.
Well, that's right. I think, Nancy, really, you know, rule number three, which is they don't want you to know about rule number two, is really a kind of corollary of rule number two rather than a separate rule. But, you know, maybe we could have a discussion about that, you know, maybe online or not. But it's an interesting idea to toss around, isn't it? What are the actual root rules, as it were?
Well, I think the root rules are in cosmic reality. I mean, I seriously do, because when I was living my life, I was learning these rules, and that's why the book itself is written very autobiographically, because it's one thing to kind of like get up there and talk about the fact there is no coincidence or chance. Chance is just another name for thought, that coincidence is thought in action. It's one thing to talk about it, but to demonstrate how I was taught that by my own experiences. And so when you learn something because of an experience, you know it's true. And I learned these cosmic reality rules through experience, not because somebody told them to me. I would always get like, what? Because if you ask the right question, you get the right answer, and I'd go like, what the hell is happening? And I'd hear, well, that's rule number seven. Well, what's rule number seven? You know? And then I'd see the rule, and I'd go, oh, okay, that makes sense. So I think that on our show, Waltz and my show, that's coming up tomorrow, today's Monday, tomorrow night at 7 to 9 Eastern Standard, we're probably going to start talking about each of the cosmic reality rules so that people understand what they're about, you know, and why they should be aware of them. The reason that I know that I'm here is because I learned the cosmic reality rules, and I basically lived for them. Now, there was a time where I got away from them, but then when I wrote Cosmic Reality, the book with the two not books in it, the one from my early life and then the one later life, when I went through it and I had to re-look at this whole lifetime of rules, I realized that I had not been following a lot of those rules. And once I got back on the path and started paying attention, that's when everything started to change again. So I firmly convinced that, well, you know, Bill Brockbrader, when he wrote the foreword for Cosmic Reality, he said these are universal laws. She calls them cosmic the rules of cosmic reality, but they're universal laws. And I suspect that that's right.
So
read the book.
Read the book. How'd you get hold of the book, Nancy?
CosmicReality.net. It's you can go to the store. You can buy it directly through the store because there's the Shungite store. We do sell Shungite. And there's also a link to Jay's store in Europe because if you are in Europe, if you're on the other side of the pond, then go to Jay because the shipping costs from the United States are ridiculous. I'd rather you spend it in Shungite than to pay the U.S. postage. So you can get a link to him for Shungite, and the books are there in the store. You can get them directly through there, or you can go to Amazon. N.L. Hopkins. It's Cosmic Reality. The book is Cosmic Reality, and then there's another book, The 9/11 Crusade, that's a novel that presents the truth about the 9/11 event through the eyes of fictitious characters who are living, you know, the truth. So, yeah, read the book. I think you'll... And I'm its biggest fan, not because I wrote it, but because I read it. You know,
it was more kind of given to you rather than, sort of...
Yeah, I'd get information, and yes, I did a lot of research for it, but the more profound writing that's in there, it's more like me listening to my higher self or Gaia or whoever guides me and listening to what they're saying and then, you know, mulling it over and then regurgitating it on paper in a way that I think my readers will understand. You know, because a lot of times those messages can be very convoluted. But they do teach me. So, and then just going through, I tell people, I say, just sit down and write a journal, write your books. I mean, the fact you put that information up on your, what is it again? Crown base
transmissions. Yeah,
transmissions.
Yeah.
That is so helpful because first off, it's going to be helpful to you because you're going to relive what they said, and it's also very helpful to other people like myself. Who say, yeah, you know, it is a very long and complicated path, but look at, people were out there long before we got here telling what was going to happen. And it's very, it provides a lot of confirmation for what we're doing. So I really honor you for having done that. And please keep it up.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been a bit, I've been a bit navel-gazy, really, last few weeks while I've been... it's been cold, there's been a constant wind, so I've been in this storm, and I've kind of withdrawn to this single studio room and kind of living in here with a wood stove and cooking food on the wood stove and learning how to make flower pot into an oven, you know, some really like little survival tips. You know, we had power cuts here for a while. Obviously, I wasn't able to run the studio and the station, but I managed to, when the power went out, I used a 12-volt battery and an inverter and a laptop. Used the inverter to run the router so that I could get the internet running, and then I used the laptop with the wireless from the router to reset the site, to set it to a stream relay to keep the radio station going, and then spent a whole, you know, about 8 to 12 hours off the grid. It was delicious. I have to say, it was really, really nice to be in this lake. It was warm, it was comfortable, and yet it was off the grid. And it was like being in a sort of ancient cottage, stone cottage. Which is what it is, actually. You know, it's kind of stripped away the years of all the technology, and it got back to what it really was, which is, and it's just lovely, and I still feel grateful for living here.
Well, when Andrew hit us, the Hurricane Andrew, when it hit us and we lost power for weeks, it was so magical, because at night everything was silent. You know, it was just, everything was, the energies were gone. It was just like, yes, there was terrible devastation, but at the same time, those people, like myself, that didn't really get hurt, it was like when they started turning the power on, it was kind of like a bummer. In some cases, some people did suffer because they didn't have air conditioning, and a lot of that got to be a little old after a few weeks. But when you initially have these, like we have a storm, and very often you'll have 3 or 4 days where you don't have power, and everything changes when that energy's not there. People talk to each other, you know. The animals all relax. Even the wild animals, you know, it's just different. But now we got shungite, so we can put it on everything and change all those energies from being terrible to being wonderful, and we're having fun.
So meanwhile, during this period of like downtime and things, I thought, right, I really want to get my all my sort of and I still haven't got. I'm not able to say the right words because it just feels like wrong, okay? And eventually I did find a word. And I asked, you know, what can I call this? What can I call this website? And I just kind of called out to them, these people I've been talking to, this being that sounds like me and all that. And I just felt my crown center and my base center. And I thought, oh, crown base. That's good. All right, we'll call it crown base. So it's the transmissions from the crown to the base, from my higher self to my lower self. If you want to look at it like that, if you want to look at it on a completely kind of physical level, there's information in the mental field that is at the crown of my body, and there's information at the mental field that's at the base of my body, and they have different qualities and they do different things, and they need to equalize. So the base needs to know what the crown's doing. It's the thing that eventually all humans are supposed to be able to do, and somehow it's like this is what we all need to do. And it's like sending, and again, all right, so imagine like I was talking about the plasma arc between the sun and the earth. This is the plasma arc that runs from the crown center to the base center, and it's not what people, it's the same channels as the Kundalini channel. But it's the other way, and that's the proper way to do it. You don't make the Kundalini go up, you allow the energy to come down from the crown to the base through clear chakras all the way through the initiations. And then this can come up. But anyway, so I called it crown-based transmissions, and I'm just about to register its domain within the hour. So it'll be crownbasedtransmissions.com. And it's basically my journal with myself. If you have ever read the book Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh, or any of these writings by people who have had connections with between their selves, you know, they have these conversations with their subconscious mind. They may project it into another person. They may call it Archangel Throd or Zimom from Zarg, you know. But it doesn't matter. What really is the conversation between your subconscious mind, your superconscious mind, and yourself. And this is the veil that Walter was referring to. And we get these flashes that come through the veil, and that's how it happens. It's a plasma spark. It's just like the opportunity that the sun gets to send a flash of energy that will, like a lasso, hook the planet, send it some information, send it food, packages, parcels, information, energy. And it happens like a spark. And if you can sit quietly enough and catch it, you can write it down. But it happens all the time, and it's going through us all the time, from our crown to our base. It's only when you sit quietly enough you can actually tap into it. But it's just something that happens all the time. And if you have any issues with things in the body, it's usually because there's a there's a miasm there that's blocking this transmission. So anyway, crownbasetransmissions.com will be excerpts from this conversation that I've been having for the last 15... Well, it started in 1988. I got an introduction on the front cover anyway. I took a picture that was taken about 3 days ago of Comet Lovejoy passing by the Pleiades. In this symbolic way of a, you know, a transmission. And indeed, there's a Genesa crystal, picture of my Genesa crystal, a geometric form made of copper, twisted on it. And you will see these. And I've gotten some nuggets. Because basically what I've been doing is I have the... I never made... and it wasn't regular. I'm incredibly lazy and undisciplined. But I do things enough for long enough to collect things. So I've got all these things. And they're basically like me talking to me as if... You know, because people come to me and, ask me... my advice, and I reflect back what they say, and you know, they often go away very happy. It's the same sort of thing for me, really. And if anybody was talking earlier about what is the monad map, there you go. Yeah, it's the energy that your crown center is accessible to, given a quiet enough etheric body that allows these transmissions to move through without resistance. Resistance develops into diseases, and resistance happens on a psychic level, and there are results sometimes of trauma, sometimes of ego, which is also a result of trauma. It's mostly a result of trauma. So anyway, so you have to start dealing with all the traumas, and that will clear your body out, and it'll clear this these toxins out, and you'll be able to hear quite clearly what your higher self is saying. Your monad talks all the time, communicates all the time in feelings. And so if you sit quietly and feel with a piece of paper in front of you, or a typewriter, or a as we use here, a I can't do it speaking. I don't seem to be able to do it speaking. I think speaking is the communication of this lower mind. Speaking.
Oh, no, I've seen you do that.
What?
You remember one time I stopped you and I said, Jay, have you ever heard what you said just now? And you weren't even sure what you had just said. And when I reminded you, you went, oh, no, I've actually never even thought of that before. So I've seen you do, when we're doing shows together, I've seen you bring in information that I was pretty sure you didn't have before you started bringing it in at that moment. So I think you do speak it.
All right. Probably. Probably this is, you know, there's this other guy, the one who can't really speak very well, and then there's this other guy who's very eloquent who speaks, which is, that's the monad. That's the monad that speaks through JP. Probably why he calls himself JP. And it's weird that he's speaking about himself in the third person. Anyway, like we're talking about before with this corporation, and we're a ship. Each person is a ship. There, you know, I drive this ship called JP or Jeremy. But I am somewhere else somehow. I'm like an avatar. Stuck somewhere, as are you. We're all in different places.
You're getting really out there now, Jay.
This is journeys, isn't it?
It is journeys, and that's what, you know, I think that's what kind of scares people, is that once you watch people and they're looking at their phones, they're not realizing that they are multitudinous beings inside of yourself. You have your right side of your brain and you have the left side of your brain. They actually operate on two different systems. One's like a parallel computer and the other one is like an analog computer. And the right side and the left side are like two different personalities. We know this because of what happens in a stroke situation or damage to one side of the brain or the other. The personalities are very attuned to you know, which side is operating. So if you understand that, and you understand that you actually are going to have conversations between yourself in many cases. I mean, one of the things that they have done to really kind of cripple our own development is to tell us, don't talk to yourself. People will think you're crazy. Yeah, you're crazy, and crazy is dangerous to them. You know, so talk to yourself. I tell people that the reason that I have gotten as far as I've gotten is because I consider myself my own best friend. And I actually talk to myself as if I would give the advice to my best friend. Honestly, you know, with no holding back. And I don't think we should do that because of this reason, or maybe we should do this because of this reason. And if you understand you've got a higher self, which is it's the oversoul. It's a soul that knows that there's all these other personalities. And you say to the oversoul, okay, you can talk to me through my emotions, but I really want to be able to get in there and understand the experiences of these other people. Then, because you have set that in motion with your own intention, you will begin to have situations where you are introduced to other lives that you've had. The deja vu effect. And much more. But you have to tune yourself to allow this information to come into your reality. So we are. We're many layers of beingness to begin with in an individual. And then you take all these little layers of beingness and you put them together in a group that wants to work together, that the ego, the concept of I want to control you or I think I know more than you, doesn't even play in. You know, I mean, it just doesn't. There's no egos involved in here. Nobody's the boss. It's the group. And we've discussed that concept of group. What comes first, the group soul or the individuals coming together to create the group soul?
Well, to me, that is the working out of the energy of the externalization of the God force consciousness on the planet, which is the, you know, it is a turning inside outness, a continual turning inside outness, like, where does all this stuff come from? You know, where does the zero point energy come from? It's another dimension, and so it's all of these things that turn themselves inside out. I don't want to use the word excrete, but you know, it just comes out of them, like this Genisa thing where the threes become the fours and the fours become the threes, and it goes one to the other. By the way, I bought a tuning fork last week. It's this 432 cycles a second. This is the sound of 432 hertz. This is the natural A of indigo color. Let me just see if we can hear that. There's a beautiful sound. Anyway, that's the that's 432. I bought it last week, and this is it's all connected, of course, the sound and the proportions and the crystal form, the Genisa crystal, and all of these things. It's a continual rolling. It's like I can describe it in my mind. And you talked about it before. It's just like, imagine a donut that is continually coming up from the inside, like a fountain, like the top of a fountain, and then it goes down and becomes like the reverse of the top of a fountain, and it just keeps going. So it's a circle. This is toroidal motion. And actually, we ought to bring Walt back in because I know you've got stuff to say about this. This is your zone. Take it over, Maestro. You got 10 more minutes for the rest of the show. Or 6 more minutes. Hey, go on.
Well, it's funny that you're talking about toroidal motion, and that's the shape of the field that the spirals generate. When you're looking at your Shanghai Spirit Spiral, that's the shape of the field that the spiral makes. Because there's actually three vectors of motion in that spiral. You have the rotation along the circular axis, which is what you describe as going, you know, in and out, You have the rotation around the central axis, which is around the vertical axis in the center, and then the flow that's going from the periphery to the center of the coil. So you're looking at three vectors of energy flow, and they come together to form a toroidal field. And that's, it's very in tune with us because that's what our bodies generate. If you look at a human body from a distance, it generates two toroidal fields because one is male, one is female. And then the heart itself produces the two toroidal fields, which is very powerful and far bigger than the field created by the brain. So if you take a look at the known universe or observable universe, the shape of the universe is a toroidal field. Because did you ever get a chance to read a book by a Russian scientist that became a naturalized American? His name is
Bukowski?
No, George Gamow.
Oh no, I was going to say Schauberger after that. No,
don't you?
Oh, he has to go. There was something going on there. So let's have some more 432, shall we?
Sorry, just went to close the door.
All right. Well, I just gave him another blast of the 432. There we go.
Oh, nice.
You know, if you have this going through an electric coil, you can actually heal bodies with it. This frequency, 432.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
So,
electromagnetically induced.
Instead of a sine wave, if you project that out on a square wave, is even more healing, because the when I built my Rife machine, which produces the plasma wave, the actual, hold on a second, I'll be right back.
Alright, well, when you have a wave and you turn it from a sine wave to a square wave, what you're essentially doing is adding almost a very large number of harmonics to it. So you get the note, and then you get its octave, and then you get its third octave, and so on and so on. So you start off at 432, but you also get 864. Oh yeah, 864. And then on and so on and so on. It just keeps going. You double for each an octave, right? In frequency, if you take a note and you double its frequency, so 432 to 864, then that has gone up an octave. And all the notes exist in that gap.
All I know is that 432 thing that you just blasted with me with, I'm so stoned, I hope our audience is not driving cars.
Sorry about that, if anybody's died up as a result of me playing that.
Wow, that is very powerful energy. Yeah, put it through some shungite and see what happens.
Yeah, well, what I was doing, if I put a chunk on the bottom of the thing while I do that, let's see if it does its transmission. I think I was playing with my Elite last night. Anyway, here we go. Here's some more 432 for you, everybody. Take a deep breath, just relax.
Oh yeah, the shungite took with it. Okay. It out.
So there you go. There's a gift for everybody. Going out through your quantum layers, out through every ripple, every tiny. Do you realize that you're like the star systems in a galaxy? There's as many cells as in your body as there are stars in the galaxy. Imagine that. Anyway, we're just about out of time for Journeys tonight. Thank you so much.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's okay. That's okay. Just at the end of it. So, thank you very much, Walt Silver.
For your information, if you're going to use the signals through a coil for healing purposes,
yes.
See if you can feed it in the coil, but not as a sine wave, as a square wave.
Okay, well, that's easy. You just put it through a fuzz box.
correct, because the actual healing is contained, and as you already know, a square wave is made up of infinite harmonics over the bass frequency.
Yeah, that's what I was telling everybody.
There is tremendous healing contained in those harmonics. That's when I built my Rife machine, you had to feed the signal that was used for the different pathologies, you had to feed it as a square wave. When the people building them, those who said, oh, I don't think this is necessary, they were feeding just a sine wave, they would get no effects whatsoever. So the harmonics in the square wave make all the difference.
Can I just jump in here and say that devices like the spiral that we're talking about, you can get on cosmicreality.net at the Shungite store. There's a thing that says Walt Silva's devices. And JP's got this wonderful thing up, and he does websites, and I'm cosmicreality.net. Thank you so very much for being listening to us.
Thank you very much, Nancy. Everbeyondradio.com and look for crownbasetransmissions.com. Thank you very much, everybody. Walt Silver, Nancy Hopkins.
It's been great.
See you all next week.
Thank you. Be safe.